When the right people come together at the right moment, when they care almost as much about winning as they do about each other, they can become the best of the best.
Welcome to the best soccer show, the best soccer show in the whole world.
Here we go. It's the best soccer show. Jason Davis, Jared Dubois, live on a Tuesday. We're doing it on a Tuesday. We're here.
Taco Tuesday.
Whatever.
They have tacos in Puerto Rico?
They do have tacos. Actually, I have a story about tacos that maybe I'll tell at some point. They would not meet Jared Dubois standards. I can tell you that right now. The interpretation of tacos in Puerto Rico leaves a lot to be desired if you are, you know, if you're able to get your hands on the authentic thing. So
can we comment on the fact, like, is that a front door behind you?
That is an office door. I was talking to Nikki.
That's a very ornate office door.
So I was talking to Nikki Soup and Sausage before he Soup and Salad before he came on the air. Obviously, for people who don't know, I am still in Puerto Rico. I'm at my in-laws' house in Bayamon, Puerto Rico. If you listened to last week's show, which was recorded only, no live, then you know it sounded like shit. I'm just going to say it sounded like shit. There's no really other word to describe it. Since then, your boy has gone out and bought a podcast microphone.
You're that guy.
From the Walmart to improve the quality. Obviously, we're also live tonight, which is great. Everything here is concrete and metal. Like, there's just nothing.
Oh, great for acoustics.
Perfect for acoustics. Makes everything sound beautiful. Like,
if you ever want to know what a podcast from Abu Ghraib sounds like, dude, this is it.
I don't have the drops here either. You can't do that to me.
All right, Guantanamo. You can't
say that. I mean, what the hell? No, it's more like I was going to say a high school gymnasium, but that's not nearly as edgy, is it? That's not nearly. Yeah. There we go. So here we go. Justin, the guy who has a radio show. Jared, did you know I have a radio show?
You won't shut up about it.
I have a radio show. The guy who has a radio show didn't bring a mobile mic. No, this is the thing, Justin. I did, in fact, bring my radio rig. That's a headset. It has a microphone on it. Cost a bunch of money. There's this is called a Comrex. This is how I tie into the satellite radio channel that I work for. But I didn't bring the thing to connect all that to the computer so that I could talk to you, the besties, live from Puerto Rico.
So basically, he barely thought of us. That's what he wants you to know. Like, as he was packing, he got the child somehow, but he did not get the microphone.
Look, when you're putting the $800 stroller in the special $150 bag.
Oh, look at that weird flex.
It's not. It's me saying, holy crap, why did I pay all this money for these things? But when you're protecting your investment by doing all this stuff, sometimes you forget things. I don't know.
Do they do baby rental stuff out where you live? Like in San Francisco, where my brother just had a baby, like he's renting his snoo, like the swing for his day, because it's like $1,500, but it's only costing $500 to rent it for like 6 months.
No, the snoo is a whole thing. You can rent it from the company that makes it because it's so damn expensive. So yes, you can rent a snoo anywhere. Luckily, we had neighbors who had plonked down the whatever $1,800 for the snoo, and we just borrowed their snoo for like 5 months. So we got lucky on that front. But yeah.
All right. So tell me about that fruity drink you're drinking there. What's in that fruity drink that you got? It looks like an island drink.
This?
Yes.
This is just juice. This is not alcohol. I'm not drinking alcohol right now.
Oh, you mean Hugo.
Hugo. Hugo. Yeah, this is actually jugo de naranja y zanahoria. So
I know what banana is. I don't know what that last one was.
The naranja is orange. Although here they call oranges chinas for reasons I don't want to. It's just a story about how they got here. So they call oranges chinas, like from China, chinas. And then zanahoria is carrot. So this is orange and carrot juice, Jared. This is something that my father-in-law.
Some vodka in there or something.
There was some rum at one point, but right now there's no rum. So we're here and we're live. I'm so happy to be back here talking to my boy. Now, I don't know how this is going to go, because not only am I live from Puerto Rico with all of this nonsense happening, Jared's in a mood. What's up with you? Like, you came in fighting. You were swinging.
Oh, please. Please. What? Like, you didn't deserve everything you got.
No, I'm wondering, is this, like, because of the U.S.?
Coming in here with your XM radio cred. Oh, I just hit the mic. Dang, I just proved your point. I just proved your point so badly.
We had a whole thing about Jared's mic technique. He got so annoyed at me for pointing out a problem with his mic technique. And Nikki Subatel is just trying to produce the show, and you're sniping at him. It's like, just back off, man. It's all good.
Listen, I'm animated. I'm animated. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, I move. That's what makes me not you. And that's what makes me the glue of the show, right, is that I'm not you.
I talk with my hands all the time. I just never smack my microphone while I'm doing it. Now, look, I was going to ask you if the U.S. women's national team performance in this Olympic tournament to this point is what's got you all feisty. Do you want to talk Olympic women first or Olympic men?
Well, speaking of something that's not animated, if you want to talk about something that's not animated, we can talk about the 11 players on the field for the U.S. in two of these three games so far. I'm fine with talking them off the top. Obviously, Gold Cup is something that we'll get to, but the women's national team at the Olympics, maybe we're spoiled. Maybe we're spoiled.
Oh, but we're definitely
spoiled. Really seeing,
100%.
What I think we're really seeing is the natural evolution of when do you rebuild, when do you phase out older players, when do you bring in newer players that we thought might rear its head at the last World Cup. Yeah. It's really rearing its head here because, and I mean, listen, they have too many choices, to be honest with you. There's a lot of good choices. There's no real bad choices with U.S. women's national team. You know, there's a lot of really good players.
They're a bad combination.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think you're seeing there's a lot of tinkering going on right now. And I'm wondering which of the tinkering that we're seeing. The main thing is we've always talked about how do you get Roosevelt, Julie Ertz, Mewis, and Lindsey Horan all on the field together? You can't. So you have to choose three. And it just seems that that's always going to be a thing. But that three is pretty solid no matter who you choose. The surprising part is the Dow Kemper, Sauerbrunn kind of dissolution. I'm not sure what's going on there. They were the rocks of the center of the defense for so long.
Like a thing that's slowly collapsing. Like it's not.
Yeah,
it's like a slow motion. Impression.
Credit to Cheerita Davidson for like pushing the conversation. But that is, I'm wondering who's the first choice center backs for the U.S. women's team right now.
I think Davidson has to be on the list. Which, unfortunately. Dahl Kemper sat this time around against Australia,
yeah,
right?
But Sauerbrunn sat the game before that.
Against New Zealand, who you were always going to roll anyway. So if I'm playing to win a game and they have a very tough game against the Netherlands next, I want to say Davidson, Dahl Kemper, but I don't.
Me
no,
too.
I
me
don't
too. But
know.
That's, I mean, Becky Sauerbrunn's your captain.
I know. And I actually think Becky Sauerbrunn, in a more meaningful, like Sweden was a disaster. Like there's no arguing that. But I think Dahl Kemper was the worst of the pair in those two first games.
I still think she's the better center back. I do. I'm sorry. I think she made one really bad mess up against the one goal against New Zealand when New Zealand got when the misclearance and the trip. I don't put too much on her for that. I mean, it's her fault. Don't get me wrong. It's her fault. But I still think that she's probably the better choice overall. But I think the surprising thing has really been the sputter on offense. And listen, you can look at the New Zealand game and say, oh, they put up so many goals. That's nice and all. That was New Zealand.
Yeah.
When it came down to the tougher teams in the group,
Jared,
in Sweden and Australia, they just weren't there.
New Zealand had played together twice in like the last 14 months. They just did not have any cohesion at all. They were always going to get ripped apart. And so I think soccer fans in this country recognize that New Zealand doesn't tell us anything. But here's the problem. All right, so Sweden's the very first game. You come into the tournament. Yes, you're favorites. You're expected to go and challenge for a gold medal, and you lay an egg. Do you think that that's a true representation? This is a rhetorical question for the moment. But do you think that's a true representation of who the U.S. women's national team is right now? Because New Zealand teaches you nothing. And Australia teaches you almost less than nothing because neither team needed to win the game to advance. Vlatko's excited about the way that his team responded or executed a plan or something. And all that meant is they didn't run around a lot. That's all that was.
What was the plan? To be boring?
The plan was to conserve. I'm sure the plan was to conserve energy and to prove that you can keep a fairly dangerous attacking team off the board. I think that was the plan. And look, the thing about Vlatko is, he's been given a very difficult task, right? Like whether it was 2020 or 2021, you come out of the World Cup, you're world champions, you're just unstoppable, right? He can't turn his team over. We've talked about this. He has no time to turn his team over.
You would be the guy that assists Megan Rapinoe?
So he loses a whole calendar year because of COVID, still can't turn his team over. The best he can do is bring in a Macario and a Davidson and give Mitch Purse a look. I mean, that's really all he can do. So he's got to roll with the same group. He can't fundamentally change anything. And yet, because of their age and because of things that might be catching up to them, and because Sweden certainly knows how to beat them, he needs to be pragmatic about how he approaches this tournament. So that's what we got against Australia, a pragmatic approach from a coach in a tournament. The problem is that we're not used to that. The U.S. women's national team is supposed to go bombing forward and score goals.
Here's the thing I found odd. Why not get Macario a start in one of these three games? That's the thing that seems most odd to me, that she doesn't get one start. Even against the game against Australia, if that's just kind of a worthless game, why not get her a game? I mean, the offense looks stagnant. The offense looks like, in two of the three games, the offense doesn't look dynamic. It's not, doesn't seem fast enough. It doesn't, I mean, the midfield is doing a good job. I think Samantha Mewis, Roosevelt, they're doing a good job of creating some chances. But I think the finishing in front of goal has been lackluster. And I know they've had goals pulled back. I know, what, five goals over these couple of games pulled back, but you're offside. Yeah. What do you want me to do? At the end of the day, it wasn't good goals.
Yeah. Look, so we learned in that first game against Sweden that Julie Ertz is the rug that ties the entire room together. Without Julie Ertz, it all falls apart. Because Lindsay
But Fred, she makes up for the fact that the defense isn't strong enough in that middle, the center back position.
So again, we're talking about a house of cards, right? And that house of cards was a beautiful one in 2019. And so this is what I want to ask you. If I had to pick your poison button, I would play it for you right now. Do you think that the United States women's national team, this core group, that they got sort of a bonus tournament in 2019 that actually, you know, maybe they played beyond some of the things that were affecting the team, and that was kind of, you know, that was a tournament that should have gone a lot worse based on their age? Or do you think that, you know, they were still the best in the world by a large margin there, and it was always going to happen?
Okay, after the World Cup, you and I had the conversation. After the World Cup, how come more U.S. players weren't in Europe after that? You know, how come when we were talking about all the rankings of the top 20 women's players in the world, there's like one American on them. Like, all these rankings are coming out of the best players in the world. And I think what we're seeing is something that we've been talking about for 2 years now. Individually, I don't know that these U.S. women are the best players in the world. Cohesively, okay, as a team, yeah, I think they're the best team in the world sometimes. Yeah. And I think it's falling right now. I mean, you've got to get Lindsey Horan back to Europe. You've got to get Alex Morgan back to Europe.
No, but is this premised on the idea that European soccer is better soccer and a better challenge?
I think the best players are there right now. And here's the thing. And I think what's happened over the time of COVID is that they haven't got the games against France. They haven't got the games against Netherlands. They haven't got these games against Sweden. And all these other teams have been able to play each other overseas. And the U.S. has been – how many times has the U.S. played Mexico in the last year and a half?
They played Mexico a lot, but they also did play Sweden to a 1-1 draw where they didn't look great and they didn't take away –
but you see what I mean? Like, in terms of they're not getting the reps – this is the same thing the men's team struggles with, especially over the last year and a half, is not getting quality competition internationally for friendlies or tournaments.
So I mean, I certainly understand the argument that because of COVID, because the early shutdown of NWSL, because the fall series was not a serious competition really, it didn't have a lot on the line, that – the women's players needed to go somewhere else to get games to be sharp for the Olympics. It's why Rose went. It's why Sam went. It's why Kristen Press and Tobin Heath went.
And I think those four players are probably the best players, or look the best player, like the four best players most of the time. Sam Lewis is having an odd tournament, but leading into the tournament, she was stellar. I think those four players are the sharpest, most engaging four players on the field outside of Julie Ertz out there. And the rest of the team, I'm just feeling like they don't look like they're at the same pace as some of these teams overseas. And we're really going to see against Netherlands. They might get walked off the pitch against
Netherlands. I don't think they're going to get walked off, but I do think it's going to be tough, and I don't think it's going to get – I'm picking the Netherlands to win. I think Miedema is spectacular. I think the Dutch can score. I mean, obviously, look, they have Patsies in their group, which loaded them up. 21 goals in the group stage. That's dumb.
But we know this team is good.
Yeah, certainly we do. I mean, look, the World Cup finalists in 2019, right?
And USA probably had the most difficult group at the Olympics. I mean, three of the teams in this group were fantastic. And maybe that's part of this as well. There's too many choices you have to make for lineup changes and stuff like that other teams aren't having to worry about.
So do you buy what Alex Morgan said, which is, and this is, and look, players say this kind of thing all the time. And in this situation, obviously they have an incentive to. The tournament doesn't begin until the knockout rounds. That whatever happened before really doesn't matter. But do you believe that what we saw against Sweden, New Zealand, or Australia informs what comes next against the Dutch?
I think this team is professional enough to believe that. I think they've been around enough, they've been through this enough times to know it does truly start at the knockout rounds. That being said, the best teams in the world usually look like the best team in the world most of the time. They don't have to just wait and turn it on. You know, this is not the NBA when they have 80 games in the season and they wait to the end. There's not as many games here. I mean, you really have to show who you are. Because here's the thing. Do you think Alex Morgan is going into the Netherlands game confident?
I don't know.
As a striker.
I mean, the wealth of her experience would make me hope so, but I can't imagine that she feels all that confident considering the way she's played so far. But look,
one game that had a lot of goals, Carly Lloyd started.
But here's the thing about this, right? This team is held to such an insane standard, and I wrote about this today, that this team is expected to dominate. Not just win, they're expected to dominate, and they're supposed to play in a certain way. So what Blacko did today against Australia runs counter to the ideas of what the U.S. women's national team is supposed to be, which offends a lot of people who watch this team. The Germans won a World Cup in 2014, Jared. What happened to them in 2018?
They didn't. Did they even qualify?
They didn't make it out of the group, right? They fell flat on their faces. Yeah. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't hold the U.S. women to a high standard and that they should be allowed to fail necessarily. But as the world creeps closer, right, the rest of the world is creeping closer. And these players age to a point of you have to change. I don't blame Vako for taking this team. I think he had to take this team. But they were always going to hit a wall at some point. You just can't predict when. Maybe this is the wall. They're not, you know, they might not be good enough, right? And they didn't win the Olympics in 2016 either. So
I'm going to say the same thing to these women, the younger women on this team that players were being told after 2017 when the U.S. missed the World Cup. Get your own players to Europe. I know, hey, I get it. NWSL is a good league, but the teams that are probably going to win this, where are their players playing? They're not playing NWSL. Okay, well,
some of them are. Yeah, some of them are.
Some of them are.
Yeah.
But yeah. Come on. Like, I think the allure is starting to be there, and I think the players that are listen, maybe I'm a Euro snob. I don't know, man. But I'm just saying, I think that right now, the momentum is in Europe, not the USA. And pandemic's part of it. I'm not saying it's just NWSL isn't a good league or anything like that, or the talent's not good. Pandemic's playing a part of this. If you can get over, like I said, I think there's a reason why Kristen Press looks good most of the time. Sam Mewis looks good most of the time. Tobin Heath, even coming back from injury, still looks pretty good. These are players that went over to Europe and pushed themselves. And I think Horan is rumored to be going back maybe to PSG, I think.
This is a weird hill for you to climb, though. I mean, I just don't think that's the difference. And not in the women's game. I believe it could be in the men's game, obviously. And we're seeing
You think that the U.S. women overall are getting the quality of games they should be getting compared to the players they're playing in Europe, both internationally and club-wise?
I believe that the NWSL from top to bottom is a more competitive league, and that week to week the games are better than the
MLS is a more competitive league than the Premiership.
Hold on a second.
Doesn't mean it's good.
Hold on a second. The balance of the leagues in Europe is so top-heavy that I don't think, even for the clubs that are good, Manchester City, PSG, Barcelona has some good players, I don't think week-to-week you get a good enough challenge for that to be the issue. There are good players there, right? What I'm saying is they might benefit on some level from being in Europe. I don't know, but I don't think that's the problem. The way that it might be for a player in Major League Soccer who wants to be part of the U.S. men's national team needs to get to Europe to be in a better league.
I'm just saying the U.S. women can't play Mexico five times a year and expect to be good at the international stage long.
Again, the problem is that with anything regarding friendlies and preparation is that it's impacted severely by COVID, and it's hard to know how much of a problem that was for this team. And
the other part is, at some point, Vlatko's got to embrace the youth. When's the right time? Is after this tournament the right time?
It's not going to be now.
So Megan Rapinoe is a starter on this team.
Well, she wasn't against Sweden in the first half, and he brought her on because I don't know. And look, Megan Rapinoe also got called out for walking at various points during that game when it looked like she needed to track back on defense. So no, I'm not suggesting that Megan Rapinoe is the answer. I'm just saying that the difference between Megan Rapinoe and whoever might be slightly behind her, and look, you can start Press and Heath together. I don't think it's a big enough boost to say, oh, well, Megan Rapinoe shouldn't be on the field. And I mean, again,
the one of the questions is we don't know how fit Tobin Heath is. Can she play two games in a week? I don't know. I'm not sure. Or two games back to back. I'm not sure if she's at that place just yet. But I do think that there's a difference. She's a difference maker when she's on the field. And I don't think there's a lot of difference makers one-on-one on this team right now.
Okay. We've got open phone lines. Nikki Soup and Salad is here to take your phone calls. 717-727-2378 if you want to talk U.S. Women's National Team and how they seem to be, you know, coming down from the heights of those double World Cup wins. Don't know yet. Again, this game coming up on Friday is going to tell us a lot about this team. Now, the U.S. men, semifinals of the Gold Cup up against, how do you say it, Jared? Which way do you go with here?
The next game?
Yes.
Qatar.
It's Qatar? You're going to go with Qatar? Okay.
What are you saying, Quator?
No. There is a school of thought that Qatar is a better pronunciation, approximation for English speakers. And I have been called out on the radio for saying Qatar.
You're going to get called out no matter which one you say, by the way.
And also Qatar. So this is what I've taken to doing. Qatar, Qatar. We're playing Qatar, Qatar in the next game, Jerry.
Call him QAnon.
I don't think that's necessary.
All right, my bad.
Adrenochrome, can you pick that up at a 7-Eleven?
Here's the thing. USA got lucky here when the way this broke down, because their side of this tournament is way easier than Mexico's side of this tournament, with having Qatar and having Jamaica, which is a good team. Don't get me wrong. Jamaica's a good team.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't have Costa Rica on their side. They don't have Canada on their side.
I'm going to say this. I think you're wrong. I think out of all the teams left in the semifinals, Qatar is the toughest.
I was talking about quarterfinals. I was not about semis. Well, I bet Mexico's going through a harder side of the knockout phase.
Well, okay, but they beat Honduras. I don't think Honduras is all that great right now in the quarterfinal round.
But Canada and Costa Rica, they're going to have to go through one of those two.
No, they are. But I think you're underrating Qatar. I think that they're going to be extremely dangerous on the attacking of the field. I don't know how
you're going to die on that hill, huh? You're going to die on that Qatar hill.
They're the Asian champions. Qatar is the Asian champion, Jared. Now, that should mean something, right? Now, you can talk about the makeup of the team. We don't know a lot. Every single one of their players plays domestically, so it's kind of hard. But they definitely have some talent, right? We've seen it show up in this tournament that they've scored goals in. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think it matters. What I think is going to be interesting is that this is a significantly different sort of challenge. I mean, I think what I've been told is that, and if you watch the tournament, you can see that Qatar is going to play in a way that is similar to Jamaica, at least in terms of being active, wanting to hit you hard.
Press.
With the counter. They're going to press you a little bit. I mean, the United States, I don't know they want.
I think U.S. is susceptible to that. Yeah. I think that what we've seen is that the reason why Jamaica gave them such a hard time is I don't know that we have the quality in the back to beat a dribble, to beat someone on a dribble and break that pressure. And that's how you deal with teams like Jamaica. Once you beat them consistently off the dribble and open up, you know, the field in front of you, that punishes a team for pressing. The U.S. doesn't seem to have the ability to punish a team for press. When you talk about the midfield in Busio, Leggett, Kellen Acosta, they're not really man beaters on the dribble. You know, they're good passers.
Right.
You know, a good in short spaces, but the way you punish these teams is you actually beat them one-on-one, and then you have a numerical advantage going forward.
Yeah.
So I think the U.S. is going to have struggle with that.
So it obviously brings up the question of how do you play against them? And look, we haven't been here since the game on Sunday against Jamaica. And if you want to give me a synopsis of how you think the U.S. handled that game, I mean, look, it wasn't pretty.
This is a good take right here for Justin, but does Qatar have Andre Blake?
They probably have an Andre Blake. I don't know a lot about the goalkeeper.
That is something about Jamaica that is a game changer that not many teams have. So we'll see about that. But in terms of how I think they should play going into this game.
I do want to let James from Tucson get on the air because he wants to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team.
Let's do it.
James, you're up. What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? So I just think that, you know, I don't want to be accused of writing off this women's team before. I just don't want to be accused of writing them off because obviously it just feels like, you know, 2015, they win the World Cup, and then 2016, they have the Bad Olympics, and there's all this talk around Jill Ellis. And then 2019, they look like not just the best team in the world, but it was one of the more dominant World Cup wins I think you'll see. So, you know, saying all that, though, at the same time, I think it's pretty clear, like you guys were saying, that the generation, the group that is still consisting of the core of this team is really at the tail end of their career. And I don't know, I was just thinking about it. I mean, I don't know if it's different with the women's game than the men's game, but I think we've seen a lot of situations with national teams, whether it be France or Spain, where, you know, a Megan Rapinoe or a Carly Lloyd or even to an extent like an Alex Morgan at this point in their careers might have retired after a 2019 World Cup. And, you know, I'm not, you know, nothing against them sticking around, but there does at some point have to be that next generation that comes in. And so it's interesting because I still could see them winning it. I'm not saying that they can. I wouldn't be even surprised that they went on to win the Olympics, but it doesn't really feel like, I don't know if you guys know more than me, probably. I'm not following it that closely in terms of like who's coming up, but it just feels like there's going to be a lot of huge holes to fill. And there's not really a lot of players that I see coming up that are going to be able to fill like the 7 or 8 giant holes that are there.
Well, so Jared, let's just take this sort of by positional group, right? Because I think, look, you could talk about Alex Morgan, who I think is 31. She's got a lot of miles on you know, on her because she's played a ton.
I think she's fine. I think she's a full cycle.
She's probably going to be in another full cycle. Megan Rapinoe is a player that we definitely could see, you know, move out of the team in the next year or even less than that. This could be her last big tournament. Press and Heath. I mean, Heath is a little bit older, if I remember correctly, but
I believe so. Yes.
Both of them are like what, early 30s at this point. And in the women's game, that's hardly old. In the midfield, Mewis and Horan are not going anywhere. Rose Lavelle's not going anywhere.
The midfield is the place that's right where they need to be in terms of age. Ertz is a little bit older, but in terms of Lavelle, Mewis, Horan, you've got three that are ready for another cycle. Yes. I don't think you have to tinker much at all.
Right. We are talking about starters, right? Depth is a factor, and we can't ignore that. At the back, Becky Sauerbrunn is probably going through her last big tournament, I would imagine. I don't think
she
makes it to 2023. Dahlkemper is how old at this point?
Let's see. I'd have to look up and see how old she is.
She's probably got another cycle based on history, but whether or not she's the right player.
The U.S. soccer website doesn't put their ages in. It says their data.
She's only 28. She's got a full another cycle in front of her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Kelly O'Hara is definitely one that you could see maybe move to the side and maybe still play a role, but that could be Mitch Purser comes along. There could be
The thing is, I don't know that. I mean, Emily Sonnet's not ready to be a starter.
Well, Emily Sonnet, but I mentioned Mitch Purser. Maybe she gets to. I mean, she's an attacking player. It would be very Crystal Dunn to have her starting at right back, but there it is. That's what you're dealing with. Mm. And then we talked about Tyra Davidson. She's a center back of the now and of the future. And then, you know, goalkeepers last forever. I don't think a listener is going anywhere. So there may be a choice to be made at some point, but there are options in the pool. So, it's not like you're turning over the entire roster.
I don't know,
roster.
Guys.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you guys feel the same way as me about this, but I totally agree with you in terms of the players that are coming up who could be the core moving forward. But it also feels like that core just isn't going to be as good as the core that just – is going to be leaving. Like, I don't think that, like, a Mewis, Lavelle, they're all good players, and maybe they can reach that level, but it doesn't feel like that core is going to be, if that's going to be the core moving forward, then it's going to have to be a much more balanced team. I mean, you're talking about replacing Carly Lloyd, Megan Rapinoe, and maybe not in the next cycle immediately, but eventually
but
Alex Morgan.
We already replaced like Carly Lloyd. Replaced Carly Lloyd once, and no one remembers this because she was a midfielder.
Yeah, yeah.
She was a midfielder her whole career, and no one talks about her missing as a midfielder because Ertz developed, Roosevelt developed, Sam Mewis developed, Lindsey Ranher developed. And you remember when Abby Wambach retired? We're like, oh my God, what are we going to do up front? Alex Morgan was there. And I don't know that it's apparent that that Lynn Williams is going to be a star one day. I don't know if she will or not. But these 10 things tend to work themselves out when you have good player development, and the U.S. classically has. And I don't really want to just lean on that and say, oh, it's all going to appear before us. But at the same time, has Lynn Williams had the chance to develop quite as much with the players in front of her? With Tobin Heath out, she got a lot of looks, you know? Who would be the left back, the left forward if Rapinoe and Press weren't there? We'd probably know. You know, someone would have got a lot of reps there. I think the depth is good enough. But one thing that the U.S. has always classically had is longtime veteran players. I mean, Christine Lilly played forever and was effective.
I think
Christy Pierce played forever.
I think what you have to be concerned about is that not that the next generation won't be as good as the previous one, but that they won't be as far ahead the rest of the world as a group as the last generation.
And that's what I'm saying. We've been conditioned to think that, especially in the women's game, because as there's classically before there was less games on their bodies because they weren't playing club ball. Now that's not the case. In the past, it was always embedded in camps, getting a friendly every couple months. Now the players have a lot more mileage on their body, but we're conditioned to think that every women's player can play till 35, 36, 37. So as Christy Lilly and Christy Pierce showed us, Mia Hamm played late. I mean, a lot of these players played really late in their careers. That may not be the case, and they weren't being pushed out actively the way players now. There's a lot more competition for some of these positions from these younger players. And I think we have to lean into that.
The character of this national team is going to change because, and really, a lot of people would argue it probably should have changed before because, and I don't want to get into the politics of this, but with this team, you did get an entrenched group of stars, right? And they sort of dictate terms culturally within the team, right? And this is obviously Carly Lloyd and Megan Rapinoe, but some others too. Alex Morgan is among them. And it's not that there are bad people or that they are trying to take control of the team for themselves, but it's sort of natural. Once you become established, you're a star, and you feel comfortable within the team, things kind of revolve around you, right? And what that's meant, and this is what we were talking about with NWSL contracts being subsidized by U.S. Soccer and the U.S. Soccer contracts that they sign, which are annual guaranteed contracts, not the per diem or per game contracts that U.S. men have. And I'm not getting into equal pay. I'm not going to argue that out right now. But that speaks to sort of, okay, this is our group of players. And it is for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And maybe we'll swap out one or two. Like maybe Allie Krieger drifts away, but we'll bring in somebody else. But for the most part, this is our group. That has to change because the nature of women's soccer is going to change and it's become much more like men's soccer, where one team in one tournament is going to look very different from the team in the next tournament 2 years later, rather than this, let's bring the same group of players to every single tournament. I think that's where we are. We're going through.
I think it's a good thing if that happens.
Sure.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the Gold Cup, Jared. You're talking about the Jamaica game.
So the question you had asked right before we took the call was, what does the U.S. lineup need to look like to play against Qatar? And I think the lineup that they put out last time was probably the best choice lineup that we had.
It was the now, one that we all said, wanted to see, right? For sure.
Yeah, I would make one change, and this can be tough for a lot of people to hear. I would start Jesse Zardes over Daryl DK.
Okay, so this is what I said.
I think he's been absent, man. I think sure. He's had the chance, and he's been absent.
We can talk about Daryl DK and his performance, because he hasn't really measured up to what we hoped he would be. And by the way, I don't think that means he can't be a factor in qualifying.
Oh, I still think he'll be better on top line than just
over
Zardes.
Time, right? But this maybe was – and the guy hasn't – he became a professional, meaning he made his professional debut in July of 2020, and he really hasn't stopped playing or rehabbing since then. He hasn't had a break. So
I'll say this though. I would play DK if it was the first choice A team for the US. I would play DK.
In what game against because I think it matters.
I don't care. A World Cup qualifying game. I would play Daryl DK in the
Well, you would start Daryl DK in the Azteca tomorrow.
Yes, and here's why. I don't think there's enough people around him that can supplement for the fact that he's not good at holding the ball up front. And I think that is hurting this team. There wouldn't be as much asked of him.
Because you don't have as much possession? Is that what you're saying?
I think the glaring thing that we've noticed about Daryl DK over this tournament is that his back to goal at his feet under pressure is not a soft touch, and it puts him into trouble and he loses the ball. I still think he's great physically in the air. He's got decent speed.
You want him to run channels, he's right?
He's good. But right now, he's a black hole for possession, and that's rough. And that's where Jesse Zardes is 100% better than him. It's where Josie Altidore was the best out of all of our options.
Absolutely, and if we could go back and clone Josie and get a 20-year-old Josie, I'd happily take him. I think Daryl Dickey can improve with those things, but it's interesting because he, as much as we've been entranced by his goal scoring, and we'll get to Zardes in a second because I do think that's interesting. As much as we've been entranced by DK and his goal-scoring exploits at Barnsley and at Orlando last year, Orlando, you have Nani and Chris Mueller and a couple other tricky winger types who are out there making things happen. And
Beating players
and getting the ball into Daryl DK. Barnsley, as you pointed out several times, was basically playing Route 1 straight up to Daryl DK, right? He doesn't have to win the ball back to goal because he's not asking his midfielders to come in.
He needs to flick a ball on.
He's just supposed to flick the ball on or go win the ball in the air or just muscle somebody off to take a shot. As you said, in the U.S. men's national team, that's not going to be what he's asked to do. And if that's the game that Berhalter wants to play, and it's a more effective game for the players that would be around DK in the A squad, then you have to go with somebody who's better. Now, you're saying that you would start Jossie Zardes in this tournament over Dale DK.
Yes.
That's if you want to win the tournament.
Win. Okay. If you want to win. If you want to develop Daryl DK, you put him in the field.
I said this at halftime, or it was 60th minute or whatever, against Jamaica. We hadn't scored yet, so Hoppy hadn't gotten on the end of something yet. I said, you have a choice if you're Greg Berhalter. You either bring in Jossie Zardes if you want to win the game, or you leave DK in because you want to try to learn something else about him. Now, I don't know what that could be, because I didn't think we were going to learn anything else about him. But you had that option. It was a choose-your-own-adventure for Berhalter. And he went with option A. He turned to page Jossie Zardes and brought him in. Yeah. And it changed the game. Like, almost immediately it changed the game. Now, there are other players who came in at the same time.
I think Jossie Zardes has more of an ability to change a game late than Daryl DK does because of the speed that Zardes has and the movement that he has. I think late in a game, that matters more. And I think he's a better sub off the bench than DK probably would be.
He understands how to get defenders to move. And that's what we've got people talking about, his movement. It's not just Jossie Zardes is better with the ball at his feet back to goal. It's not just that that turn and that shot. I mean, Andre Blake with a great save. That is a danger that DK had not shown in this. I mean, I think he's capable of that in certain moments, but not in this tournament. And what Zardes does is he understands when to drop to create that space in behind, which can then be exploited if he's got teammates that know how to do that. And he'll drag
He's decent at absorbing pressure and holding the ball for a pass. And that's where Daryl DK still has that's the number one area I think that he still has to develop is, you know, he's strong enough, but I just don't think his first touch has enough finesse yet to, under pressure, still absorb pressure and make a good first touch away from pressure and be able to hold.
Yeah. And again, I don't think he's 100%. Like, I think that he's working with 80%, 85% capacity right now, and that has shown up. So we're going to see what happens against Qatar on Thursday night.
If Matthew Hoppe has to be on the field, though.
I think he probably does.
Without a doubt.
Now, we were kind of calling for him. You love the idea of Hoppe on the wing. You were calling for him. Yeah. Now, the only reason I could see for not giving him more time early was because he needed to build some fitness. He's in preseason form. He only played, what, I don't know, 15
I mean, honestly,
games.
It was Jonathan Lewis's position to lose. So good.
I mean, look, Berhalter hasn't struck all the right chords. I think he did in the Jamaica game make the right choices off them. I think there was the right lineup, the best lineup available outside of
Unfortunately, I think Areola was kind of absent during the time that he was on the field. Yeah. I don't think he brought you that much, but he gave you a person that's actually playing the right position.
I don't think Giacchini would have been a good idea in that situation.
I don't either. I think he made the right decision in starting Areola, but I'm not too surprised that we didn't get too much production from that area. I'm a little bit surprised that Shaq Moore wasn't able to take more risks in going forward. And let's not forget, Shaq Moore had a good opportunity on a half volley that he kind of whiffed on. Yeah. And you know who played him that ball? We're not talking about it because it didn't score. Matthew Hoppe played him that ball.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Matthew Hoppe, that ball, two great shots on goal on volleys. You know, the goal at the end, the energy that brought up front.
I'm going to claim this. I'm not the only one to say this, right? Ryan Rosenblatt said it on Twitter. I had somebody say it to me on the radio today, and I can't even remember who it was. But I said it in the middle of that game, and I'm going to claim it. I don't know if I was the very first person, but you can find the tweet. Matthew Hoppe has Clint Dempsey energy when he's on the ball. Like, there's something about him willing to try things. He's got a bag of tricks. He's not afraid to pull them out. And I think that while that can sometimes be a luxury thing and it kind of gets a little loose, you know,
it's picking the times. That's energy. The part that Clint Dempsey had to learn as well. At 20, I think Clint Dempsey probably didn't know that yet either, knowing the times when to do it. And Stu Holden did a very good job of pointing this out on the live broadcast. There was a time where when Matt Turner had to make the outstretch save to his left, that came from a giveaway by Matthew Hoppe doing too much in a defensive part of the field. Yeah. So you have to learn. He's not playing as the front striker in this lineup where he can make mistakes up there and he's up the field.
What I love is that, I mean, look, and obviously we've become normalized to the idea of 19-year-olds in our national team, which is crazy to think about. But go back and, you know, think about Clint Dempsey and how great he was for the national team. And people got at me on Twitter like, don't stop with the Clint Dempsey comparisons. Look, I'm not saying Matthew Hoppe is going to be an all-time national team great like Clint Dempsey. No. I don't know yet. It's possible.
He's got swag.
But he's got swag, right? And at 20 years old, where was Clint Dempsey? What was he doing?
He was in college.
He was playing at Furman University.
Furman
University. You're gonna say
with a bowl cut.
You got to say Furman because down there they say
with a bowl
Furman.
Cut.
And we got a 20-year-old
looking like
kid
a beetle
who might be playing in the second Bundesliga. We don't yet know where he's going. He's got Premier League interest. I don't think that's a good idea. I think you should find a...
If it's a bottom table club, I don't think that's a bad idea.
You think that he should go to like a relegation fodder club?
If he's getting minutes, I'm fine. Man. Because here's the thing. Do you want him playing the second Bundesliga?
No, I really don't.
That's Josh Sargent territory.
Oh, come on. Josh Sargent's better than that, too. I know you don't
love that. That's only one league up from Terrence Boyd.
Yeah, Terrence Boyd is like player of the year for his club.
Just saying. Just saying.
All right.
I'm saying it's a slippery slope to that third division.
Here's my question for you. If the United States does not win the game on Thursday night against Qatar, can you call this tournament a success?
You can maybe give it a C+.
Okay.
I think you give it a C+. Right. Because here's the thing. The whole tournament from the beginning was about learning about players. Did you learn about Busio? Yeah. Did you learn about Bethy Hoppy? Yeah. Would you have felt the same about either of those players if you hadn't seen him at the Gold Cup?
No, probably not.
Maybe Busio?
I mean,
but not Hoppy, probably.
I was high on Busio, but you still have to see him do it. You still have to see him in the virus.
What about Shaq Moore?
No, definitely.
What about Shaq Moore? Was he on anyone's radar before
this? I'll tell you.
Miles Robinson. What you've learned about Miles Robinson and Sands.
And James Sands are the two other guys, right? And in fact, if we wanted, it doesn't make any sense to do it because it doesn't matter. We want guys to help us with qualifying and they can all come. But if you were going to rank your breakout players, because I think it's an interesting question because there have been several guys who've made a case. How do you rank your breakout players, Jared?
Number one to me is James Sands.
Okay. Okay.
Number one, number two being Miles Robinson, number three, Shaq Moore.
Sounds like a defender talking. Hoppy. What's happening here?
Well, I mean, I think there hasn't been a lot of goals scored, Jason. No, I don't know if you noticed or not. Yeah. So, well, I mean, it's really shown more.
Especially with the fact that Walker Zimmerman had to pull out. We talked about that after the first game.
There wasn't much age on this roster, and that was one of the guys that had it.
And experience. And look, we thought that Berhalter was going to augment the roster. He calls in Kessler and Cal. He sends Cade Cal home, just not, I guess, you know, I don't know what the plan was, but he obviously didn't.
Maybe Cade Cal didn't want to commit.
Oh, that's interesting. You think that's
In for a look. Come in for a look. Berhalter says, hey, come in, let's take a look. And then maybe when rubber met the road, he wasn't quite ready to say that he wanted to commit to the U.S.
Maybe that could be a possibility. I hope not. Henry Kessler's staying, but we hope Henry Kessler doesn't play, right? Because
That means something's gone wrong.
Exactly.
The Sands and Robinson's partnership looks good enough to see this tournament out. But here's the thing. The reason I say C+, because everything we just said was good stuff. You got to see all those players see how they play. The difference to me why it's not a more advanced grade if they go out of the stage is because what's important to the real evolution of this team and this generation of players is breeding winning. Breeding winning is something that if you really want this next generation to live up to the potential they have, you have to start breeding winning.
So if you go on the premise that there are three or four breakout players who might be part of the qualifying team and therefore have a legitimate shot to make the World Cup roster next year, if, knock on wood, the United States makes it, that's actually a good point from Jackie. Maybe Paul Ariola getting healthy meant that Cade Cal was no longer necessary. Yeah. I mean, that's possible.
Maybe.
But if you believe there are four or five players that have broken out and could be part of the World Cup one day, you're going to suggest that them experience winning now will have an impact on the Pulisics and the McKennies and the Adams and Ziz. It's a culture thing is what you're saying, right?
No, you're thinking of it a different way. I'm saying those guys are already getting that taste of winning Champions League trophies, the Nations League. Those guys are already breeding a culture of winning, but right behind them, you need to have these next guys ready to meet their desire and meet their work rate and meet their expectations.
So you don't think that if Gianluca Busio showed up in a full A squad with the national team after they had won the Nations League and bred some winning, that wouldn't just like, he wouldn't just like, anime style, suck that into his body, and then like it housed the winning spirit inside.
There might
him.
Be some of that, but I think experience matters, and you want to get these kids experienced with setting their expectations at the cup, not their expectations as impressive.
It's just interesting to think about this as kind of they're two distinct groups here, and doesn't mean that they can't morph. And you know, when a full squad is together, you would expect a couple of these guys in the Gold Cup to be with the A squad. But I just think it's interesting that you do have this like partition between these two groups of young players. One definitely more accomplished, not just with the national team, but clearly with their club teams. And then this other group, the Busios, the Hoppies, certainly the MLS-based players.
Sands.
James Sands, Miles Robinson. those guys, and they can be crucial, but they are kind of, and they're, look, they're the domestic players, right?
The unfortunate, the biggest loser out of this, and it's unfortunate, is Walker Zimmerman. It's not because of anything he did on the field. He unfortunately got injured and allowed
he's still
Miles Robinson
the
and
World Cup
James. He's
process.
Going to, but we know a center back position for the World Cup qualifiers is open right now. Right now, there's a center back position open.
Yeah.
And do you feel that either Sands or Miles Robinson has jumped Zimmerman on the depth chart based off what they've been able to show at the Gold Cup?
I mean, I know this sounds like a cop-out. I think it depends on the game, but I think Robinson kind of has. I'm not positive because I think the veteran presence thing matters to Berhalter on some level.
So, Miles Robinson, what's Miles Robinson good at? One-on-one defending, yeah. Ball distribution.
Yeah.
Okay. James Sands, I think he's a better playing the angles and channels. I think he might even be a better passer than Miles Robinson, to be honest with you. He's more comfortable on the ball when he goes forward, I feel. And that's probably because he has a midfield background as well.
Yes.
All those things are not what you would describe in Walker Zimmerman. And that's fine for Walker Zimmerman because I think Walker Zimmerman is the better classic defender, set pieces, both ways set pieces. I think he's a veteran. I think he's less prone probably to mistakes than some of these other younger guys. Which of those two profiles is better to put with John Brooks? Because that's the question we're asking. We're not saying who's the best defender.
Yeah, I think
we're saying what's the best complement to John Brooks.
If we're looking for a partner for Brooks to help cover up for some of Brooks' deficiencies, and he doesn't have a ton, but his athleticism and his speed is certainly one of them, then it's Robinson over Zimmerman, right? So you're saying that if you're going to kind of think about Aaron Long and what he brought to the table, Robinson is closer to the profile of a Long than Zimmerman is.
Yeah, I would say, like, what do you want? Do you want, like, a bash brother with him? If you want a bash brother with him, that's Walker Zimmerman. You know, if you want someone that's a little more cultured next to him, that's – I mean, we're leaving Chris Richards out of the conversation right now. But we should be saying Chris Richards may end up being the runaway guy with all of this. And Mark McKenzie we're not talking about either. We're just talking about this. If we were picking from these guys.
No, but this is the problem that American soccer – the U.S. men's national team fans have. And I saw a thread on Twitter today about, if you don't have Chris Richards number one in your depth chart after John Brooks, you're crazy. You can't think about this in a vacuum. You have to think about it in the real world. And I'm looking at this.
Context.
I'm looking at the schedule again, Jared. It's El Salvador away to El Salvador on September 2nd
in DC.
No, that game's going to be in San Salvador.
Just
kidding. Then Canada in Nashville. So you're going San Salvador to Nashville. Then you got to go back down to Honduras. Right? That happens all in 6 days. 6 days it'll happen.
Chris Richards ain't going to play all three of those games.
No. Chris Richards is probably not even going
to. John Brooks may not play all three of those games.
But here's my question. Knowing what we know about this group, knowing what we know about the European-based players, and hoping that everybody is healthy. I mean, let's all just, you know, say a hallelujah and everything else. Let Tyler Adams be healthy, dear Lord. Christian Pulisic and the whole bunch. How do you handle that? Do you need to win in El Salvador to start off the process? Because El Salvador is going to be fairly tough to play in, atmosphere.
What's the third game again?
Honduras away.
I think you try to get full points out of the El Salvador game and the Canada game.
I think because the Canada game and the El Salvador game are within 3 days of one another, I think you're going to play a A-minus team against El Salvador. And you're the best team I got against Canada at home because you have to win
I think differently about this because I think you put your best players out those first two games because they could be injured by the third game. Something could happen by the third game. You know they're healthy out the game.
But I'm saying that you play the best team you have against Canada absolutely without question because it's a home game. You need to win it. You're in front of your home crowd. But I don't know that you can
let's
run
say, Tyler Adams
out.
Gets one game. Which game? When Tyler Adams gets one game. What game is he playing?
Canada. I want him in the Canada game.
We need him to win at home.
I think you could play Kevin Acosta on the road in El Salvador.
So basically you're saying is that the points at home are so important, which is true for World Cup qualifying. World Cup points at home are the thing. But you should be able to get points at home maybe without Tyler Adams, to be honest
with you. Okay, possibly. But I think Canada is better than El Salvador. So now you're talking about, okay, I maybe can scrape a point away in El Salvador with a slightly weakened team, right, without playing my frontline guys. So I go down there with Kellen Acosta. Maybe I start Daryl DK if I want to give him a challenge. But I also have Josh Sargent and Chassie Zardes ready. You know, maybe you start Brennan Aaronson instead of Christian Pulisic in that game. I don't know. And then you go home against Canada. You roll out the whole A squad, and then you see how that goes. And if you get full points and you feel good and everybody's healthy,
Are you saying in El Salvador you play for a draw? Or are you just saying you play for your B team?
I'm saying you play your B team hoping to win because you're good enough to beat El Salvador with the B team. But you obviously a draw is an acceptable result. because it's World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, always acceptable. Anyway, just if you guys that maybe newer to the sport and don't remember last time USA was actually at a World Cup, World Cup qualifying, win at home, draw on the road, you're fine. If you win, that's awesome. I know, hey, we should be the big team. We should be winning every game. Cool your jets. Cool your jets, okay? Like, just play pragmatic and you're going to be fine.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about here, yeah, for certain.
Before we move on to center backs, we're quick question.
So what we're talking about, center backs?
Chris Richards. Yeah, well, I mean, I just wanted to ask one question. Chris Richards, currently with Bayern Munich, not with Hoffenheim, is he still the guy if he's a bench player for Bayern Munich? Because the reason everyone's so high on him is because we got to see him start and look really good at Hoffenheim.
But this is my thing. This is my point. So the reason Chris Richards hasn't been involved with the national team has been injury, right? And then he's with Bayern Munich and they might need him, but they're not sure. Hoffenheim wants him back. By the way, if you want updates on any of that, Derek Ray on Twitter is your man. He's always like keeping an eye on all of the German papers and all that stuff. He knows what's going on. He'll share.
And Brian Schroeder.
Sure, but Derek Ray, yeah, okay. Both of those guys. The timing of this, right? So you are, 5 weeks away from World Cup qualifying starting in San Salvador. Do you think that Chris Richards can get sharpness? All of the European guys are going to be working towards getting sharp again, right? The 5 weeks away isn't like deep into the European season where you're definitely comfortable and everybody's got all the engines fired up. So you have to pick your spots here. Like, you've got a Christian Pulisic who's kind of in preseason form. How much are you going to play him, right? You got MLS guys that are in the middle of their seasons. Maybe they're a little gassed, but maybe they're sharper, right? I'm not saying
you roll out of Pulisic may play all three games if he's still a super sub for Chelsea.
I mean, that's possible too. Like, if he's not getting minutes.
He had the legs under
him. But you also, so there are players that you make that trade-off, right? Maybe the sharpness is not there, but I can't justify leaving him out of the lineup. I don't think that's Chris Richards, because you will have a Miles Robinson who's going to be in the middle of the season with Atlanta United, because you will have Mark McKenzie. I don't know if he's any better off necessarily, but he's got a spot in a team in Belgium.
And currently, Matt Miazga is playing preseason with Chelsea. Played half the game today. If right now, if you're Jason Davis, everybody's healthy. Everybody's healthy but Aaron Long.
Uh-huh.
Who's the four center backs you're taking on the World Cup squad?
Everybody's healthy but Aaron Long.
Go qualifying squad. Excuse
me. John Brooks.
Everyone but Aaron Long. Yep.
John Brooks, Chris Richards. This is World Cup, so I got some time to get this all started.
World Cup qualifying. I said World Cup qualifying.
The first game against El Salvador?
Yep, first cycle. Jesus. No Aaron Long.
Wow. John Brooks, Chris Richards, Miles Robinson, and if Walker's healthy, I'm taking Walker, I think.
So no Mark McKenzie.
No, and I know James Sands. Either.
The guy that got you through the Nations League.
No, I don't think so. I think it's
okay.
It is tough.
I'm going with Brooks, Richards, Mark McKenzie,
and Miles.
James Sands.
Oh, James Sands over Miles Robinson.
I think he's a better. I like him so much, man. Miles Robinson, I think, is still good. I think Sands gives you. What Sands also gives you is that replacement for Tyler Adams or Kellen Acosta if you need it as well.
Point of order.
There's a little hybrid thing there.
Point of order. I am declaring that we will forever call him Jimmy Sands on this show. I just think it sounds way cooler to call him Jimmy Sands. Are you on board with that?
Yeah, done.
All right, done.
Approved, seconded, motion carried. All right.
So, Senator.
Can we say in gangster voices?
Yeah, like
Jimmy Sands.
Jimmy Sands. Told me that he was going to play some Jimmy Sands. Jimmy Sands. The situation with World Cup qualifying, I don't know if complicated is the right word, because I'm not sure where he fits. This Nations League and this Gold Cup experience hasn't really told us a lot. But Yunus Musa is out for a couple of weeks with Valencia. He'll probably be back in time if you want to call him in. And Jared, you just talked about the midfield and how there's not anybody that can carry the ball forward. That it's a lot of, you know, you've got to pass around a little bit in the pass and move stuff.
Obviously, Weston McKennie can do it. That's one guy that can do it.
Okay. So, but do you think that this complicates anything for Greg Berhalter, that Yunus Musa might not be available?
It complicates, but what it might do is give Brendan Aaronson an opportunity that he didn't have before. Brendan Aaronson's been seeing a little bit of time, like that 10 in Salzburg in the preseason right now. I think there's a potential, if you need a guy who can move the ball forward, Brendan Aaronson could potentially help with that. What he's not going to help with is the defense, and that's But if you have Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie in there, do you need Brendan Aaronson to play a lot of defense? And I don't even know if Brendan Aaronson is necessarily the guy. But when I think about the options available after Yunus Musa to link the midfield to the offensive three,
that's what we're talking.
Brendan Aaronson makes me feel better about it than, listen, can Sebastian Legette do it? He can.
Yeah.
He can. Yeah. Is it what he's good at? Nah.
Yeah.
It's not. Brendan Aaronson, to me, is a better option there. Maybe people are going to say Gianluca Busio. I'm just not too convinced with him going forward of what he's seen at the national team yet. Losing the ball a little bit too much.
I think Gianluca Busio rebounded quite a bit in the Jamaica game from a pretty weak performance.
I still think the passing isn't where it needs to be at the international level.
Okay. Well, he's got to build into it.
Ball winning looked really good.
Right. Well, I'm not saying start him in a World Cup qualifier against one of the better teams in CONCACAF.
Who's the person you would put in for that role? I'm putting Brendan Aaronson out there. Yeah. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I there's just not.
Is it Weston McKennie and you put Kellen Acosta in there? You free up McKennie from defensive responsibilities and let him kind of push. Juve this weekend really kind of played him in the center of the midfield for a lot of the game.
I don't mind necessarily moving things around. I don't mind Kellen Acosta being in there and playing a role. I mean, those two guys, the two 8-10 roles, they don't necessarily have to occupy the same spaces on their halves of the field, but you certainly want them to be both goal dangerous, passing adept, and defensively can put in some work. I'm okay with Kellen Acosta, who really is more of a two-way player than
This is one that went through my mind as well, and this is from Eshwar, and he says, why not play Gio Reyna essentially and start Way or Aaronson out wide?
You could do that.
I'm just saying that I'm seeing Brendan Aaronson getting some minutes in that part of the field right now with his club team.
If you're going to have a lot of the ball and you're not necessarily worried about counterattacking ability. I mean, that's not going to be the case in a lot of these CONCACAF games. But if you're not necessarily worried about a hole created, and I don't think that Gio Reyna is like a disaster defensively, but he's clearly not a two-way player the way that you would think of that role necessarily. But if you're not worried necessarily about those things, then yeah, play Gio Reyna. I mean, play Gio Reyna against, El Salvador at home, right? I'm not saying El Salvador on the road, but play him. And look, the problem with saying things like Gio Reyna is going to be playing in the middle for Dortmund this season is that Dortmund will have other ways to cover for Gio Reyna's deficiencies.
I'm surprised if that's the case. They've lost Jadon Sancho, or I think, is that...
Oh, that's done. Yeah,
Without Jadon Sancho out there, that's one more winger that's not out there. I don't think he's going to move centrally. I don't see it. Maybe they will. And if we do, I'm excited to watch it. I would love to see what Gio could do in the middle of the park a little bit and see if he can split some of these balls, because I don't think he is kind of a classic outside winger out there. I think he does well at the position. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would like to see what he could do in his dad's old position in the middle of the field.
His dad's old position, yeah. Yeah, his dad needs to, like, give Gio some tips. Here's how you play as a...
Hey, what did you think when you heard the Bello and Busio talk and say that Gio's the biggest shit talker on the team?
I believe it.
Were you surprised by that?
No, I wasn't. I think that there's an extra level to... He looks like a nice kid, but I think there's like a darkness to him. Like, I think Gio has a little bit of that edge to him. I wasn't surprised by that. Did you see them talking about... They were talking about Mario Kart was canon in DK. Yeah. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I saw that one.
They talked about an anime that the anime question went right over my head. I had no idea what all that was about.
I have no idea. Yeah, that was some young man game. That was old dad FC on us right there. But I will say this. Props are due for the U.S. soccer media team. We've been talking for a while about the fact they weren't doing things like this and they needed to be doing things like this. And before we get to the caller on the line that wants to talk about Gio, I do want to say that it's refreshing to see them make the opportunity to open up the personality of the players, because it's something that's been missing for a number of years now. So I really like what they're doing
there. I mean, it's a group of kids that have a ton of personality, including Gio, who, again, I don't know that we get a lot from Gio. KP from New York, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, I just wanted to agree with Jason. I completely don't want to see Gio in the middle, because when you have Gio in the middle at the eight role, you're forcing him to play defense, and you know, that's not what I want to see. I don't know if you guys remember, but in the Honduras match, Gio was getting hit hard by a lot of players on the Honduras side, and he was effectively, you know, bodied out of the game because he was taking a lot of hits. And we're going to be seeing that a lot during World Cup qualifiers. So, I don't know. I think of that anytime somebody says, oh, we should play Gio at the A role. Well, I mean, he's going to get bodied out of the game if that's the point.
Well, look, I mean, there's a way to play in that area of the field that doesn't require necessarily to be super physical, but you cannot be physically removed from the game. This is why, and it, the system doesn't work for it, Jared, but there was a, remember that discussion about whether or not Christian Pulisic should be playing through the middle? Like, Christian Pulisic's got to play as a 10, he's got to play through the middle, but we didn't,
yeah.
Berhalter was never going to run a system that allowed for that, and when Christian Pulisic did line up centrally, exactly what KP just said. Physically, the CONCACAF team yeah. just absolutely murdered the kid.
I think didn't he line up the middle in the Trinidad Tobago game that we lost in 2017?
Yeah, I think that's.
I think he was in that position for Bruce Arena. But is KP still on the line?
No, I let him go. We got limited time.
I was interested to see. I just interested to see what his take would be on who you should play there.
Okay,
then,
well,
because to say someone doesn't work is fine.
Sure.
Who does work?
Yeah.
That's the interesting question to me.
Give us your thoughts there in the chat and hit us up and let us know. I got a couple of things before we get to Nicky Soup and Salad I want to bring in. There is some thought that Sergiño Dest could move from Barcelona. Apparently, Arsenal, Bayern, I think Monaco have been calling about. They've been picking up the phone and been digging. There's been ringing.
No, it's Dortmund, not Bayern, I think. Well, Bayern always is. Bayern's always. The most recent one is Dortmund as well, though.
Add another German team to the list. And
all the Bayerns.
They're obviously circling because Barca's got issues, Jared. They got big financial issues. Apparently, Dest is saying, no, I want to stay here. I think that's probably the Ronald Koeman's factor, and it's Barcelona. I'm not sure it's the right decision, though.
You think the Koeman's thing is that big deal? He chose USA over Germany, I mean, over Netherlands when he was the coach.
That doesn't mean he doesn't like Ronald Koeman's. And
I think it's the fact that Messi just re-signed.
Could be that.
So you want to be a part of that.
Could be that.
You want to be a part of the next 5 years. Is it 5 years Messi signed for?
Yeah, but he's not going to play 5 years.
Yeah, he didn't. No. 5 years. But also, I mean, you now have Aguero that's now come to the team.
But
there's a couple things going on here that maybe you want to be a part of.
All of those things are sort of, they're in limbo at the moment. They're TBD because Barca's got to move like a ton of salary because of that financial fair play stuff and everything else.
Is Sergiño the salary that has to move, though?
No.
There's other salaries out there that need to move.
No, but if they get, say, 30 mil for him or whatever, they put that back in, they can get their books balanced. So
And then Sergiño Dest can be the guy at Barca, one of the guys. Like, he could be part of the thing what they build around, like they did with Dani Alves.
Could be.
You know, like, he could be that guy, and I think he's good enough to do it. I understand the allure. You just got there, too. He wants to do this.
Okay, KP is responding since he called. I would put Weston legit right now, Musa, if he's healthy and ready for 90 minutes. All right. The other one is, just we should acknowledge it, we don't have any time for, like, serious MLS stuff, and I don't have the drop. Ricardo Pepi with a hat trick. Put on a cowboy hat after his hat trick.
Yeah.
You like that move? Are you for that move?
Did you see that stat about Dallas? I was floored when I read this.
How about... go ahead. You delivered. I know what you're talking about.
The fact that they don't have a single player on their roster that's played for a team other than Dallas. That,
in MLS. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, in MLS. Yeah, yeah. That is ridiculous.
That's crazy.
That is crazy, the commitment they've made. And they just keep selling dudes.
So,
like, Pepe's going to sell.
Okay, that's what I'm going to ask. So, Reggie Cannon, gone. Brian Reynolds, gone. Tanner Tessman, gone. By the way, at some point I thought Paxton Pomykal was going to go. Clearly, he's not going to go right now. It's not good enough.
You could say McKennie, but that's not
true. No. Actual guys they signed and sold because that's their choice, right? They didn't choose to let McKennie walk.
Did you say Tessman?
I did just now.
Okay.
It'll be ridiculous if they also sell. I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't sell Ricardo Pepi, and he may have a. He did. I mean,
Che could be going too.
Che could be going, although they did turn down Bayern's offer. I think. Pepe just signed a new contract, a multi-year deal. So they're locking him in so that when they sell him, they get
MLS
something.
Is doing really well with this. Have you noticed this? They keep locking guys in right before they leave. Like, Julio Araujo just did a 5-year deal with the Galaxy. He ain't going to be there for 5 years.
No.
Pepe just signed a 5-year deal. He ain't going to be there for 5 years. There's another team that just did it, too. And I can't remember who it was. Just locked a guy. Didn't Busio just sign a new deal before he's going to?
Well, yeah. That's not a done
thing. I think it was last season, though.
The Venezia thing for Busio is not done, although it looks like he is. Look, I was looking at their roster. I can't tell you I know a lot about Venezia, who played in the second division in Italy last year. But they are going to have two young American players. Do you think they're going to give both those guys significant minutes in the same area of the field, Jared? Like, that's kind of hard for me to imagine.
Are they the same area of the field?
Well, I mean, they're both central midfielders. You're not playing either one of them wide.
Yeah, different, though.
No, I'm not saying they're not. Tessman is a pure box-to-box guy. That's 100%.
Yeah.
And Busio is either a deep-lying playmaker, which might work in Italy, don't get me wrong, or maybe higher up the field underneath the forwards. But I still think that they're both central. And that's when you watch teams, and this is what's happened to Yunus Musa, right? We think Yunus Musa is better as a central midfielder. But when he plays with Valencia, they put him out wide because you trust a player less when he's young. You put him out wide where there's less of the ball, or he's, I don't know, there's less room for, like, there's more room for error out there. If the ball turns over, whatever. Do you think Venezia, in their first year back in Serie A in 20 years, is going to play a couple of American kids like that? Like that?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't know if they're going to start. I think they'll play. I think Weston McKennie has really helped with that. I think the fact that he came in last year and was an integral part of Juventus, and you could say one of the brighter parts of Juventus last season, that helps. I mean, they have American owners too. I mean, like, they're going to play Americans. You know, I think they'll play. I don't know that either one of them is going to, like, start every game, or I don't know if they're going to be essential, but I think they'll both play.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is Pepe's the interest for Pepe is Bologna, which is a very, very good side to go to as well. So that's an interesting thing if he goes out there. So Italy, all of a sudden, what do you make of Italy being the destination? Because forever it was Germany was the destination for Americans.
Yeah.
What do you think about Italy becoming the destination for Americans?
I think Americans are still going to go to Germany. I just think there are more American players that are getting attention, and therefore there are other leagues that are starting to pay attention to that. And I think Italy is catching on. Italy is a league, some of these clubs, Venezia, Bologna, they don't have tons of money. I mean, they're not swimming in it. And there's value in American players. And not just in terms of maybe Ricardo Pepi goes to Bologna and scores some goals, but maybe Ricardo Pepi goes to Bologna, scores some goals, and then is worth 25 mil or 30 mil or 40 mil down the line.
And we know this about Dallas. They're all about the sell-on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dallas can be about the sell-on. They're really smart with this. And my question is for Dallas fans. Are you good with this? Are you good with this, your team never competing in MLS and just being the team that, because here's the cool thing. If you're a Dallas fan, you ain't going to have a trophy in your box, in your case, but you get to watch players that had your jersey on play for some of the bigger clubs in Europe. That's a pretty cool thing.
It's a cool thing, but come on. That's not as same as having a trophy in your case. That's not.
I know, but you could also say we've produced more talent than most of the other teams. We just are good about selling.
That's a nice thing if you don't have the trophy when you're trying to win a trophy. But if you're trying to win a trophy and you don't have one, saying things like, oh, yeah, but our players go to great clubs in Europe. That's nonsense. That isn't. I mean,
a lot more youth is going to play at your team.
Jared,
you're going to get a lot more premier youth coming to your team if they know that they sell players.
I am a U.S. men's national team fan. I want Dallas to crank them out and send them abroad and then get good there and help our national team win. I don't care if they win a thing.
If you're a premier youth player, do you want to play in Dallas or Seattle? Because Seattle made a lot of waves this week playing a lot of young kids. But next week, they're not going to play them.
No.
I mean, once Ladero's playing minutes, they're not going to play him. Once Morris is back, they're not going to play him. There's a difference between what Seattle is doing to get him through something, and credit to them, playing their kids, still looking good playing their kids. But I want to be at Dallas.
Yeah.
If I'm a premier youth option, I want to play in Dallas because they have a track record of getting me overseas.
I agree with that. Absolutely agree with that. Can we talk? We don't have a lot of time. Can we talk about Kanye living at Mercedes-Benz Stadium? Is that a thing we could talk about?
How's that a thing?
That's a thing. Like, I don't know.
Did he bring a chef in or something? Or is he eating concierge food all the time?
No, he brought a chef in, or he's got. I think he probably
Why is Mercedes-Benz Arena a muse kind of thing? Like, what's going on there that inspires?
Do you know what they say it looks like when that roof opens and closes? Do you know what they say it looks like, Jared? It has this like this star-shaped aperture that opens.
A booty hole?
Maybe Kanye's muse is the roof.
Oh, you know, I mean, you've seen his ex-wife. You know he likes a booty.
Kanye had a listening party with 53,000 people at Mercedes-Benz for his new album. He loves to do this, right?
Let's be honest. Pretty damn baller.
Oh, no.
Pretty damn baller.
I have my issues with Kanye, like, the last couple years or whatever, but the guy's a genius musically. And obviously, like, if you could draw 53,000 for a listening party, and on, like, not a complete album. This is what he does. He, like, plays the like, rough version, the rough draft for people, and then goes back and finishes it. And instead of like, okay, I'm out, I'm going to LA or Chicago or whatever, he's like, oh no, I'm just going to post up here. I'll just find a space in a Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
And like, who gave him permit? Who do you think gave him, or do you think he even asked permission? Do you think that anybody actually said, yes, you could do this? Or he just like laid down his stuff? Like squatter
I think
rates.
He laid down his stuff, and then a person on his staff that has the worst job in the world has to make it happen. Like he just decided, I'm staying. But wait, that has to be the most lonely place in the world when it's empty, though.
Oh yeah, stadiums are the worst when they're empty. Like, have you ever been in, especially the giant ones?
Like, how big is your entourage if that's where you're living?
Man, it's that. Yeah, that's a weird feeling.
Which Atlanta player is the player that's going to become part of his posse?
Oh man, that's a good question. Personality wise,
I'll say George Bello's got some flavor, sure. But he ain't there right now.
Ah, I mean, he's young too, awfully young.
And how pissy are George Bello and Miles Robinson?
They're at the Gold Cup.
That they're with the national team.
They want to get back as soon as
possible. Kanye's dropping tracks in their house.
That's funny as hell.
And he's not there for the. They're not there for the party.
That's so good, man. All right, Nikki Soup and Salad is here. This is the part of the program where we identify our biggest supporters via iTunes ratings. And
whoa,
go ahead.
Whoa. What? Nikki's on. There's something else we have to ask him before we do the reviews.
What's up?
Dos Acero.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that's right. Forgot about that news. Yeah.
The rumored news.
Yes, so that's the rumor.
That Cincinnati is getting the USA-Mexico.
Well, lay it out for us, Nikki. Tell us like how this has all kind of come out in the last day or two.
Yeah, DJ Schweitzer, Wrong Side of Pond on Twitter. He's a staff writer of mine.
He's like an EDM person?
No. DJ's his name. Oh. He's one of my writers over
DJ
at
DJ Swiper would be a better name, I think, for that than DJ Swiper.
DJ, is he DJ Countess? Is DJ Countess opening up for him?
No. Anyway, he reported earlier this week on Twitter that the Cincinnati was getting a World Cup qualifier. He was kind of unsure of which one it was going to be, whether it'd be Costa Rica or Mexico. But he's hearing that it's going to be Mexico. I'm also hearing that as well. There's going to be an announcement tomorrow in Cincinnati. So... yeah, that's big. Moving down
as a non Cincinnati guy, me, this guy over here, as a non Cincinnati guy, why isn't it the Columbus's new stadium and keep the history?
I can tell you exactly why.
Columbus,
because there's 6,000 less seats at that stadium than there is at TQL Stadium.
It's a bigger stadium. It's a bigger stadium. It is
okay.
Now, there's a couple of things. It's a bigger stadium. I think it definitely feels slap in the face ish of Columbus. It does. And I know, look at you smiling. Look at you.
Every bit of it.
Nodding. Yeah, look at you. There's definitely that. But
the Cincinnati Stadium doesn't have a history of winning.
That's what I was going to say. There's kind of a stink of...
Well, at least for the orange and blue. Maybe not for the U.S. team. They haven't played there yet.
I mean, you're really messing... You're playing...
Talk about a culture of winning.
There's some mojo stuff happening here that makes me just a little uncomfortable. I'm just going to say it. That's all look, it could be a wonderful new place... For the U.S. man, God.
What's the month that's pertaining? What month is that happening?
I believe it's going to be November.
Yeah. Ooh. November. Yeah.
Nick, you can be out there?
I'm going to try. I'm going to definitely try.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have a show afterwards, so quick.
Maybe I won't be there.
I will drop some seeds in the ground right now. I will talk to my man, Nicholas Soup and Salad, who has all the hookups in Cincinnati, Ohio. But if anybody with, FC Cincinnati, U.S. soccer, I can send some text messages. Shout out to my people over there. If anybody wants to, help some things happen for your boy here, radio show, podcast, whatever, I'd love to come to Cincinnati. I would even eat Skyline chili on camera. I would even do that if necessary. Oh, man. Do you guys still have like a liquor that everybody kind of hates and loves at the same time? Like Malort? Like, you guys don't do a thing like that, do you?
No, we don't.
I would love to do that.
No.
It's too bad.
So it's been a while since I've been on the show. This is my favorite part of the show because I get to participate. Apple Podcast reviews. But since I've been not around, we haven't gotten any. We've gotten, in fact, we got one Apple Podcast review. So
you've
got to get on that, besties. Come on now. This one is from King Tom 54321. It says,
wow,
royalty.
It says, Jared's solo review. Here is the review Jared asked for. Good job, I guess.
That'd be good.
Love the pod. Good. That's it.
God damn it. Damn it.
You know why? That's because of mic technique right there. That's why you get that kind of review, because you don't take it seriously enough, man. Pay attention to your mic technique. Since we're here, I do want to shout out a couple of people who have signed up for our Patreon. You can do that at patreon.com/thebestsoccershow. Elias, Neil... I don't know how far back I need to go. Mark joined up a couple weeks back. Daniel joined up a couple weeks back. Joey, joined up a couple weeks back. So shout out to everybody who's joined the Patreon.
And they're all going to be treated with the first bonus show during their tenure, because we've been slacking the last couple weeks, and we'll be doing one tonight after the show. So bonus show coming your way, folks.
Well, that last
bonus show. We got a lot to live up to after the last bonus show.
I was
going to
say, the last bonus show carried over for a little while, because that was something special.
I want to get to this real quick before we go. Oliver, he's asking on YouTube, what's that new email address for reviews? It is bestsoccershowreviews@gmail.com. That's where you can send it to.
Yeah. So if you're a Spotify listener or something like that and you want to still leave something, send it to that address.
There you go. All right. Any other business, gentlemen? Have we fixed all of American soccer?
I think we'll just talk. I think we'll talk to Ted Lasso on the bonus
show. Oh, yeah. Ted Lasso is going to get some bonus show love. So if you're a Ted Lasso fan and a Patreon subscriber, you'll get all of that. And I have some personal news around Ted Lasso to tell you people about. Okay. Is that it? We're done? All right.
Football's life.
Thank you very much to Jared Dubois. Thank you to Nikki Super Salad. Being in Puerto Rico, I don't have the music, so we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye. The best.